Some people eagerly await the latest novel by Philip Roth, John Updike, or Barbara Kingsolver. For Steve Paulson, any new offering by David Lodge is an event worth savoring. Lodge's latest novel, Thinks, is set on a fictional university campus where a scientist named Ralph Messenger studies the nature of consciousness. Ralph is a chronic womanizer, and he soon sets his sights on a visiting novelist, Helen Reed.
Basically, the novel is about their intellectual and personal relationship. I mean, Ralph pursues her. She is intrigued by him. She is challenged by his view of the world and tries to combat it. And it's a sort of game of cat and mouse between them, I suppose one might say.
And Ralph is basically a materialist. He doesn't believe in the soul or in religion. And for him, consciousness is basically just a bunch of neurons firing away. And when someone dies, that just means the virtual machine has shut down.
Exactly, yes. And Helen, who had a Catholic upbringing, she's not a practicing Catholic, but she sort of still clings wistfully to some faint hope that possibly there is some survival after death. And this is a matter of considerable importance to her because her husband's just died. And so part of the relationship between them is an argument about that, about personal identity and whether it survives death. She's in a weak position because she isn't a real believer. But on the other hand, she feels that
there's got to be something more than what Ralph is
saying. There's got to be something. If Ralph's worldview is true, then she finds that impossibly bleak, almost intolerable. So that's the kind of argument between them.
Now, I've heard you described as an agnostic Catholic writer, which is exactly what
I describe myself as that, yes.
Which is what Helen Reed is, this novelist in your story. Yeah. Are you naturally sympathetic with her perspective?
I mean, it's very much my own, I would say, except I still actually am a kind of practicing Catholic, but intellectually I'm not very different from her, I think. When I say I'm an agnostic Catholic, I suppose I mean that I don't think we will know or can know what the language of religion actually refers to. We can use it as a kind of metaphorical language for dealing with, you know, problems about why are we here and what is it all about.
Now, you obviously did a lot of research for this novel. I mean, I'm sure you don't have to research how novelists think, but in terms of what scientists do as they study consciousness, you must have dug through what the leading thinkers are saying.
Absolutely, yes. Well, I found it all very fascinating, and it was partly that I had taken consciousness for granted in a way, as perhaps most writers do, is what we deal with. So one thing that was, you know, all very interesting and completely new to me was the what you might call the neurobiological stuff, which has made enormous leaps in recent times with new scanning techniques so that neuroscientists can actually locate where particular kinds of consciousness, emotional or intellectual, take place in the brain.
You have a wonderful exchange at one point in the novel when Ralph is saying that the problem of consciousness is to give an objective third-person account of what is essentially a subjective first-person phenomenon, and then Helen responds by saying, well, that's, of course, exactly what novelists have been doing for the last 200 years.
Yes, and it is. And Ralph says, well, that's just trickery. It's just an illusion. It's just a lie, really, that novelists give the impression that they can know what goes on in other people's heads, but it's just a kind of trick. But, you know, Helen says, well, that's why we read novels, actually. It's because we can sort of, through the artifice of the novel, get some notion of what it is to be other than ourselves. That would perhaps one of the reasons why we need fiction, which doesn't have any other sort of obvious utilitarian purpose, and yet people do seem to desperately want and need stories all the time. And the novel is a form of storytelling which is embedded in consciousness. I mean, the philosophical interest in consciousness begins in the 18th century at exactly the time that the novel becomes the dominant literary form. So that's not coincidental, I think.
But I suppose from the scientist's perspective, I mean, their response to a novelist like Helen is, well, sure, you can write about what someone else might be thinking, but that's just all how you imagine it. You don't really know if anyone else thinks that way. You can never get inside another person's head.
Absolutely, yes. I suppose it's a commonplace observation, but it's not something that we think about. Perhaps we don't care to think about it very much. If you imagine what other people may be thinking about you in the same way that you think about them. You realize that public communication that goes on between people is just a very thin layer over a kind of huge seething mass of often, you know, hostile or doubtful, you know, amoral or whatever thoughts and feelings, which really civilization requires us to suppress.
Well, and the joke in your story is really that, Ralph is doing a running commentary on tape, trying to record his stream of consciousness as it pops into his head. Helen writes a journal, and what they're really mainly thinking about are their adulterous fantasies. It's not terribly high-minded.
No, I mean, Ralph actually swiftly realizes that his experiment is doomed to failure, because the very act of articulating a thought, however, you know, roughly or randomly, is already some distance from the actual phenomenon of consciousness, which is probably, you know, pre-verbal at some point. But he gets kind of interested in the merely confessional aspect of the exercise, so it stops being an experiment, it becomes a habit.
Now, what you're doing in this novel is essentially revisiting the old debate between science and the humanities, and I guess I'm wondering if you see whether this debate has changed at all since C.P. Snow wrote about the two cultures many decades ago.
I think it's changed, first of all, in that people in the arts and the humanities are rather more open to the scientific view of the world than they were when Snow published his famous Two Cultures lecture and elicited a furious response from F.R. Leavis as the sort of representative of the humanities. And I think in those days there was a complete face-off between, you know, the sciences and the arts, the mutual hostility.
And Snow's argument was that they were really two entirely different cultures and they couldn't really talk to each other.
Right. And his point was scientists were prepared to make the effort, but people on the humanities side were not, which I think is probably a fair description. I mean, what's happened in recently, it's very striking. A number of literary novelists have started to write about subjects with a scientific dimension to them at more or less the same time. I'm one of them, but it hasn't been a case of copying. It's the zeitgeist. I think we all started to get interested at the same time. I mean, there are two areas which have excited literary imaginations. One is cosmology, the whole thing about the origin of the universe and its possible death and the extraordinary discoveries of modern astronomy and all that. That's excited some people. And the other is consciousness, precisely, which used not to be a subject of much interest to science, but has become so. And because consciousness is, in a way, the very essence of human nature, and also because the study of it is mainly either neurobiological or computer-based. It's not mathematical, which is what puts most people off hard science, because they haven't got the math to do it, you know. This is certainly true of me. But because consciousness studies is not really much about math and is a lot about psychology, biology, and because it has all kinds of philosophical conundrums associated with it, I think it's something that literary people, artists, can get a purchase on and feel they have something to contribute and participate. So I think there's now more possibility of a real dialogue between the arts and the sciences than there was when Snow first formulated this view of the two cultures.
And it seems that the other thing that has happened, particularly in the last decade, is a number of very good writers have been writing about science, popularizing science.
Absolutely.
And to some degree, these are some of the most significant books that have been published. And I suppose you could even argue that to some degree, science writing, good science writing, has usurped some of the status of literature.
Well, you take the words out of my mouth, actually. Yes, I mean, I completely agree with you. Popular science writing has had an extraordinary flowering in the last 10 or 20 years. And I agree that it has come very much to replace the position in culture which literary criticism used to have. I'm afraid literary criticism has become, you know, very professionalized and impenetrable to ordinary people. And the scientists have moved in to occupy the vacuum, I think. Many of them, Richard Dawkins is an obvious example, but there are many others, write extremely well with real style, and the works are often quite enthralling. It was very useful to me when I got interested in this subject that there were lots of books of that caliber to read. And I mean, it seemed to me when I was researching the book that there was a new work on consciousness coming out almost every week, you know, with an incredible number of books.
David Lodge, talking with Steve Paulson. Lodge's novel is called Thinks.